retained even today. And that's from a church committee report dated April 14, 1976. You can access links to the documents from the church committee and other official reports and testimony online at talknationradio.org. Rob Simmons' vote to support the new Military Commissions Act of 1976 might be a matter of his beliefs. It might be political expediency. Rights experts monitoring Congress suggest that particularly Democrats may have voted for this bill because they were concerned that the Bush administration would accuse them of being weak on terror if they didn't vote for it. But could this vote have been influenced by Simmons' history of running a detention center in the Vietnam-era war zone? Was he protecting himself or his friends in the CIA? Such questions may never have an answer if Rob Simmons is defeated in the 2006 election. But if he does manage to take office again, we're sure to see him arguing on behalf of protections for the CIA, possibly at the expense of voters in his district, who may be interviewed by Homeland Security, the FBI, or CIA. That's it for Sprouts, a weekly program distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Our guests this time included Douglas Valentine, author of The Phoenix Program, as well as Hotel Tacloban and Strength of the Wolf. You can find these and other books on his website, douglasvalentine.com. You can find his articles at counterpunch.org. Author and scholar Christopher H. Pyle teaches politics and the law at Mount Holyoke College in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Our music is from Protest Songs of the Soul Era. And Beverly Grant with Cops of the World. Thanks to WHUS Public Affairs Director Dean Farrell. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact Air Traffic Controller Ursula Rudenberg, URSULA, at pacifica.org. I'm your producer and host, Dory Smith. See you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on freakradio.org, now broadcasting, I'm told, as well as streaming at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org, Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, the October 26, 2006 edition. A particular tip of the hat to Vinny, Phil, Dennis, George, who knows, Bob, everyone else who got this station back on the air, and forgive me for those whose names I haven't mentioned. If you want to send us $1,000, you can do so at 427-4523. Check it out. Stay tuned.
El español que me mata no sabe que está cortando la cabeza que mañana cantará en un canto eterno. Se muere el último inca, Tupac Amaru se muere, todo el Cusco se desangra por mi cabeza en la pica.
Welcome to Bathurst Spears Broadsides. That's from El Cóndor Pasa, El Mito del Incara. It's Peruvian music, and it's, some of it I understand and some of it I don't. My Spanish is rudimentary. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathurst Spears Broadsides. And tonight, I'm going to hope to cover a variety of topics, probably all of them at once, or whenever they happen to come up. A lot of it based upon your calls. This is the first time in a week or so that I've been on a show that actually is getting out there broadcast rather than simply streaming. So it's the opportunity for people who haven't had that chance to call in and discuss issues that they may have heard on the stream, they may have heard about on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, or just to talk about whatever they want to talk about. I tend to focus on civil rights for poor people in Santa Cruz, city council, nonsense, pro and con, and I'm going to be, I guess I'll run down the variety of topics I'm going to run into, or I'm hoping to go through. My sometime co-host, Tenderfoot Tim, is going to be back on Sunday. He's going to make available on Sunday a tape of the Santa Cruz Law Library's Medical Marijuana Forum, which may have been responsible for producing a sort of an earthquake at the Santa Cruz Law Library and changing its ownership. It recently changed ownership from a sort of a private or an independent corporation, corporate structure or local structure. It's not mega corporate, but it was independent of the courts. Now the courts have taken over the law library, or such is the word from the folks who are now in charge. I don't quite understand what it means, except that there was some sort of backdoor talk about this being because the law librarians and people associated with it have become too independent, pressing issues like medical marijuana. The forum involving medical marijuana had Ben Rice and an ACLU person talked about the difficulties and the procedures you should use if you're a medical marijuana patient, and there was some mention of the abuses being done by the sheriff's and the DA's office around the Roger Mensch case, which Ben Rice is also attorney for Hemporium medical marijuana distributor Roger Mensch, who has twice been taken to court, once it was for essentially the same thing, felony cultivation, transportation, possession, and sales of marijuana. That's five different felonies, because there was another one, too, involving a possession of a weapon, which is legal. But if you have marijuana nearby and it's improperly held, apparently it's not legal. Anyway, all his charges at the last trial have now been thrown out. He had a probation hearing today, which I haven't heard an update on. I hope to hear from him perhaps tonight on the show. I may give him a call if I can get through to him, or I may check the court records tomorrow. You can't get the records of the court until a day later if you're interested in finding out the disposition of a case. You have to kind of wait till the records come back from the courts back into the municipal court area, and then you can actually look at the files. So I may take a check and look at them tomorrow when they come back and find out whether he's actually going to go to trial again on five charges of felony, this, that, and the other, cultivation, transportation, etc., for medical marijuana, selling it to people with medical marijuana cards. And this is prosecution by our own district attorney, Bob Lee, picked up by our own sheriff's department under Sheriff Robbins with the MET team, the marijuana enforcement team, funded by grants from various places, federal, state. I haven't got the details on that, but they come from, much of it comes from out of the county. But much of it is greedily lapped up by these drug war warriors, who are apparently supported in today's paper by such people as Cynthia Matthews and Mike Rotkin, who are refusing to support Measure G, which is, Measure K. Actually, they also don't support Measure G, the medical marijuana measure. The marijuana lowest priority enforcement measure, which, as I've criticized the backers of this, is not really going far enough. But, you know, it's an attempt at least to establish some records to hold the police accountable if they are harassing people and not making it the lowest priority, as council member Mike Rotkin insists it currently is, which, of course, Rotkin's been saying the same thing about the sleeping ban for years. Mike says a lot of things, probably because he tends to believe what the police tell him. And rather than get any kind of real documentation, I tend to listen to the people on the streets who get ticketed, harassed, and have their medicine seized by the police, and I tend to believe them. So you can get both sides of the story. You can hear Mike and me debating on free radio occasionally, and you can hear him arresting me at city council on other occasions. So, you know, it all works out in the wash. There's stuff coming up I want to talk about. We're going to talk about the police state downtown at Halloween, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, about which there's a controversy brewing around deletion of some posts and failure to inform people of why they're deleting their posts on local issues that have nothing to do with hate speech or spam or anything else. We've talked about that in the last show and may talk about it again here. Nonetheless, IndieMedia is a good website, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, in terms of a lot of the issues that are covered. I really, you know, it may sound like a contradiction, but it's not. To both praise the people who are putting out the stories that they're putting out, and one of them is me, you know, and a bunch of other people are putting it out too, and right on to the people who are putting out the news about the UC Regents, the protest against the UC Regents, the attempt to make UC accountable for any variety of things, which is going to take a lot of work and a lot of struggle. But also we need to have a debate in the community on these issues, and if indiebay.org/Santa Cruz sets itself up as censor on these matters and does so arbitrarily and capriciously, then people have a grievance, because if they're posting there and they find their posts taken away, well, it upsets them, particularly if they're not told why. And there's been a lot of vituperation on the website against me recently. You know, that's fine. People got a right to their opinions. I would like to see, you know, some simple policy changes, and it's been impossible to get those policy changes, so I've suggested that, you know, that an alternate website be set up, perhaps called Santa Cruz Censored, who knows, where those who, as has been suggested by some indiebay.org/Santa Cruz people, or at least one who's been perhaps deleting the occasional post of mine, Not entirely. Some of the posts stay up. Most of them stay up. I appreciate the opportunity to have my posts posted there. I think everybody else does, too. But there has to be, for a dialogue to be a dialogue, you have to see all sides of the dialogue. You can't simply see one side, the rah-rah-rah side. And, you know, that has to happen. If it doesn't happen on indiebay.org, then perhaps it'll happen on another website. And, you know, I say the more websites, like the more free radio stations, the better. I'd like to see, you know, more flexibility on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz because it's an established website, because, you know, a lot of us go there because we come to respect and have some regard for it in spite of how they've treated people like Becky Johnson, my former co-producer. Anyway, that's one subject I'll be talking about. Another is the candidates. There's a lot of stuff that's come out about the city council candidates. The Metro Santa Cruz had its endorsements, and I believe the San Jose Mercury News came out with profiles today. Sentinel came out today with its attack on the medical marijuana measure. Measure K. That's right. K is marijuana. G is the minimum wage. If you want to say anything about that, you're welcome to call in and talk about that. City Council last night had an interesting session. I'm going to play a cut from it. It has to do with a demonstration that's coming up outside Lulu Carpenter's a week from tomorrow. That's Lulu Carpenter's, of course, is a coffee shop kind of across from the post office on Pacific Avenue. I've been banned from there for 3 years, but that's neither here nor there. The purpose of the demonstration is because it involves an incident that happened on the sidewalk, which we've covered, and which is covered on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, on Santa Cruz Indie Media, which you can check out there. You can Google for Shane Maxfield, M-A-X-F-I-E-L-D, who is the person who was, by his report, essentially assaulted by the owner of Lulu Carpenter's, in the sense that he was verbally abused, told to leave the area, threatened to get out of town, and in a vituperative stream, when he called the police to get help, he himself instead was ticketed, given a citation for panhandling with obscene language. Now, he had with him a little rabbit, and he had a little sign that he was looking for money for propane, or he was looking for donations for propane gas for the vehicle he was living in. This is a guy with AIDS who's very severely disabled. And as I said, the confrontation between these two people is not as important as the kind of collusion that seemed to be happening between the police department and the owner of Lulu Carpenter's. And if it were simply that, it might be an example of one corrupt situation. But no, I think others out there probably have seen this too, and I want to talk about it if any of you have some thoughts on it. There is a situation where if a merchant calls the police department to get rid of a homeless person or a street person, they'll concoct something to do so, whether it's the move-along law, which can only be used in certain cases. That's the law that says you can only be in a certain spot for an hour with a display device like a cap or a little sign seeking money, a political table giving out literature, very selectively enforced up and down the mall. If you're a Democratic Party person or with WILP or with the police department, doing charity work or organizing for the anything but a local political cause or a homeless person, well, they'll tolerate you. Otherwise, they will suddenly declare there's a law present that says you have to move on, which, of course, is selective enforcement. Should be illegal. It actually is illegal. But it's not something that's easy to prove, and it's not something that's easy to fight, and it's something the city council currently, and the new city council, I'm afraid, even more so, will have very, very little interest in. Now, that's another topic. The upcoming protest on a week from Friday, a week from tomorrow, in front of Lulu Carpenter's in the late afternoon. The situation in Fresno, San Diego, and Los Angeles really holds some hope for homeless people. In all three of those cities, court suits are either pending or granted. In Los Angeles, allowing homeless people to sleep at night in the Skid Row area, without being arrested by police, and even set up tents and sleep there because of the obvious fact, like in Santa Cruz, there's no shelter for them to go to, and they have to sleep somewhere. This is something Mike Rodkin doesn't seem to understand. Cynthia Matthews doesn't seem to understand. Frankly, none of the other candidates, including Simba Kenyatta, have said really diddly squat about, even when they presented with specific questions in yesterday's Metro Santa Cruz. So I've got no particular hope in any of these candidates on that fundamental human rights issue. But I'll be talking about San Diego, where there's a lawsuit asking the police be enjoined from harassing and arresting homeless people for survival sleeping. In Fresno, of course, you heard Mike Rhodes, those of you who are listening to the station regularly and listening to my show regularly, heard him talk about, and you can read on indiebay.org/Central Valley, another part of the Indie Bay, the Indie Media System. You can read about, on the Central Valley section, the lawsuit that successfully enjoined Fresno police from seizing homeless property without cause and requiring them at least, rather not to throw it away, but to store it. I don't know, I'm not quite sure how big a step forward this is, but it's something. It requires the police to take a step back. And we need to get our police and our city attorney to take a step back as well. And while I'm clearing my throat and taking a couple of drinks of water, here's a couple of street interviews on, well, subjects that actually merge with what I'm talking about.
To four on October 24th. My goodness, it's a Tuesday afternoon, sunny and warm, but not hot on Pacific Avenue in front of the Red Poppy of the Neary Business Center across from the Rittenhouse Pole that's now gaily covered with Mexican totems and various illustrations along the enclosed walk. I'm talking on the other side of the street with a man in a wheelchair. Only has two toes on his right foot, and he has a sign, homeless, please help, God bless. Your name, sir?
Roger.
And Roger, how long have you been, I guess, seeking help, panhandling, I guess would be the one way of putting it here on the avenue?
The last 8 months.
And today, how long have you been doing it?
Since about 10 this morning.
How are people treating you?
I mean about $5.
And what about police or hosts, any passels?
No.
Because I know, I was told that your wheelchair puts you in a situation where they claim you're inappropriately distant or close to a bench, close to a drinking fountain, close to a store. Has that happened to you before? Have you been told you're too close to this, you got to move on?
Street by Starbucks, I was told that. Right next to Starbucks.
What were you told?
I was told I was too close to the building and I had to go.
You actually are allowed to sit in your chair, particularly if you're disabled. There is no law preventing you from doing that, provided you're not intentionally blocking the sidewalk. Could people get around?
Blocking. I wasn't blocking
anybody.
Remember
what officer gave you this misinformation?
It was a hostess.
Right, and you, rather than fight with her about it, moved, I take it?
Yes, I moved over here.
And that was the only time you were told you had to move?
Yeah.
So you didn't have to move, but there you are. At least in my view. I mean, I can show you the law as far as I see. I actually carry these laws around with me in my back pocket, of all things. So you were not always. Are you houseless right now? Homeless?
Yes, I am.
And so you sleep illegally?
Yes, I do.
And do you sleep in, you know, close to the city, far away from the city?
What's in Santa Cruz?
Like, you know, way the heck up in the Poganip, or you don't have to give us your exact spot unless you want to.
Nobody, nothing.
But I mean, more or less, is it like within wheeling distance on your wheelchair of the city?
Yes.
And have you ever been hassled by police for sleeping? Is that because they haven't found you, or because they recognize here's a man in a wheelchair? What the fuck? We don't want to put him in the goddamn squad car. It's too complicated.
It's because they haven't found me.
So have you ever been arrested in Santa Cruz?
Never in Santa Cruz.
And where were you arrested previously?
Hollister and Vallejo.
And what, for what crime? You understand,
being
by the way?
Being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Okay. These questions you never have to answer, whether they come from a cop or a citizen. But as an inquisitive radio inquirer, I will be asking them anyway. Were you disabled when you were arrested before?
No.
Okay. Now, how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
6 years.
And have you noticed any changes in the city?
Everything changes.
What have you noticed that strikes you?
The way the people are, I guess.
And what kind of a change is that?
They're not as friendly as they used to be, it seems like. Not, you know, Santa Cruz used to be real friendly, and now it seems like it's changing.
Uh-huh. And, well, one thing that sounded unfriendly to me when it was described to me by someone else was that you were evicted from a...
No, I wasn't evicted. I left against medical advice in a full-blown insulin reaction, a low blood sugar.
And so you felt you had to go and you left.
No, you just don't think straight on a low blood sugar. Your mind needs sugar to function correctly. And if you get too much, it's not good. But on a low blood sugar, it's really bad.
So you left on an impulse you felt it was not perhaps the best thing for you to do.
At this time, I don't think it was the best thing for me to do. But at the time, I was not thinking properly.
And what was the name of the place you left?
Pleasant Care.
And you've been there for how long before?
I was there almost 5 years.
And they. And then when you went back to say, look, I made a mistake, can I come back in, what did they say?
They said, no, you can't come back.
And their reason was?
They didn't give a reason, they just said I couldn't come back.
Who was the individual in authority who told this to you?
It was the administrator.
Remember her?
I don't remember the name.
And did you wish to appeal that decision?
For a while I did, but I don't now, because I eat better now than I did when I was there.
So you're saying that the food there was crappy and you took it for 5 years?
Yeah.
So maybe it was actually a good and healthy impulse that had you break out of that dump.
Yeah.
Wow. Are you camping alone or do you camp with friends?
I have a friend and a dog I camp with.
And
my dog watches our place.
Name of the dog?
Easy. Hey.
So any advice to disabled campers out there? Imagine there are more than one, right? You know anybody else who's disabled who's camping out?
I do.
And what kind of advice do you have for those folks?
Just hide from the cops.
Hide from the cops. Right. Well, Roger, anything else you wish to tell our eager-to-know radio audience or any appeals, complaints, insights?
Just God bless.
Thanks, Roger.
Thank you.
All right, man.
And Roger is a guy that I first became aware of when Tenderfoot Tim talked to me about him, because he apparently, as you've heard, he was ousted from a board and care home that he'd been in for 5 years. I mean, board and care might not be the right word, but a care home of some kind locally. And I know that I'm interested in hearing more details about this and concerned that somebody apparently had some outburst, he did something, you know, inappropriate. This is a guy in a wheelchair, for God's sake. So they wouldn't let him back in again, and he has been spending the night camping out. He says he likes it better, which is good. But it seems to me that this is a real reflection on the place that dumped him out. You know, I mean, I'm wondering how they're treating the rest of the people who are there. Maybe if anybody out there has any information about this, I'm actually hoping I can get Tenderfoot Tim, who would be listening in, to call in. I know he's got other stuff he's trying to do right now, or he'd be here in the studio, because this is an issue he's concerned about. Maybe if nobody calls in on this issue now, we can get it talked about on Sunday. The show returns between 9:30 and 1. I'll do another version of it, the next edition of it. So maybe I can pick it up then, or maybe I'll hear something now. I looked at on Indie Bay recently, and I saw a story, Police State Downtown at Halloween, which I found really interesting. I'd been intending to talk about this because of, I first heard about it at City Council months ago, and it was, I suppose, not surprising coming from this City Council in this year, in this century, in this country. There is what they call triple fine zones, and there's a posting that shows the poster they're putting up all over town, or at least different places. Santa Cruz County has a picture of a guy in a clown outfit with a rainbow wig on and clown makeup and a big red nose in a Santa Cruz orange jail jumpsuit. It says, the costume you start out in may not be the costume you end up in. Indicating, it says, a little hard to read here. Halloween night in downtown Santa Cruz, the costumes, the party atmosphere, it can all be pretty intoxicating, but this Halloween, make sure you're not, because 100 police officers from 9 law enforcement agencies will be out in force downtown, from triple fines to jail time. Believe us when we say this Halloween there is nothing funny about clowning around downtown. Isn't that what people do on Halloween? I mean, they clown around, right? I mean, it's packed and it's costume city, and I find it a little bit claustrophobic. But you know, it's what people do. They come in costumes and they clown around. there's another flyer that's being put out, which has, again, the same photo. And then it shows a picture of the safety enhancement triple fine area, effective 12 p.m. Tuesday, October 31st, through 12 p.m. Wednesday, November 1st. You can get fines of $288 for littering, $576 for graffitiing. If you're a homeless person who can't afford to go and buy a beer and you have an open container, that's $480. If you trespass, that is to say, let's say you're on the metro and you're a young person sitting around and they don't want you there and they accuse you of they ask you to leave, you don't want to go, you're trespassing, $576. Defacing sidewalks, you know, like writing "End the War in Iraq" in erasable chalk on the sidewalk, $576. Discharge of firearms, $1,440. But I suppose if you're a police officer who discharges a firearm, you get a commendation, a pat on the back from Mayor Matthews. Noise control, $576. So if you're a musician who's playing too loud, watch out. Urinating in public, even though the public bathroom situation after 10 o'clock will be zilch, unless they set up porta-potties downtown, which I guess they used to on first night, but I don't know if they did on Halloween. Maybe somebody out there remembers. By the way, the call-in number is here in case you're eager to call in, but I've forgotten, and I apologize for not having mentioned them for the last half hour. 831-427-3772. Again, 427-3772. You can also try 469-3119 if the first line is busy, but it'll confuse me less if you do it all on the 427-3772 line. So, call in if you've got any questions or comments. This is a good idea, this Halloween triple safety zone, triple fine area. Is it worth discussing? What else we got here is abuse or mutilation of trees, plants, and lawns. That's, of course, unless you're taking out historic trees with the blessing of the city, $1,056. Trespassing on public transit facilities is a separate section. So at the Metro, you're not going to be charged $576, just $480. Traffic regulation disobedience, I don't know, jaywalking, $192 to $960. Traffic control device disobedience, going across on a red light, $288. Improper vehicle parking, standing, and stopping, $576, and there's a number of other violations. And then I suppose we should be so grateful, as Tony Madrigal informed me at the city council meeting on Tuesday, that he was able not to get any of this modified or blocked, but to have it translated into Spanish. And it is indeed translated in Spanish underneath. This Halloween, stay smart and stay sober. Actually, it means stay low profile, stay obedient, and stay the hell away from the celebration is really kind of what they're saying. It's a replication of what they did, I believe, in Fresno, although with a less openly hostile, get the fuck out of town, we don't want you outsiders coming in. And this covers all of Pacific Avenue. It covers every side street a block away from Pacific Avenue, all the way from Laurel down to Water. And it covers Front Street between Soquel and Laurel Streets, and covers Cedar Street between Elm and Lincoln. For those of you who wonder, where the forbidden zones are, or the green zone is, or is it the yellow zone? I'm not sure what it is. That's happening for a day from noon Tuesday to noon Wednesday next week on Halloween evening. And there's some discussion on it on the indiebay.org website. And I encourage you to take a look at that article. That's at Police State Downtown Enough by Another Clown. And I guess it's funny in a certain sense. In another sense, it's pretty grim. It's hard to know what to do about it other than laugh, so I can appreciate that. The fact that it's, being treated as sort of a grotesque joke. Of course, it's no joke if you get caught up in their dragnet, and it gives more power to the police department and the various police departments, and sort of sets the seal of approval on the idea of this state of fear, which I thought we were trying to get away from. But that's one of the things we're trying to stop Bush from doing, is, the unlawful enemy combatant, the suspension of habeas corpus, all the stuff that's happened, of course, but that supposedly the great progressive city council of Santa Cruz opposes, the great and powerful city council of Santa Cruz. 427-3772 is the call-in number. Getting back to the issue of selective enforcement of laws and collusion with merchants between the Santa Cruz Police Department and merchants who want to get rid of people they consider undesirable in their area. One way to do this, of course, is to set up a whole network of laws such that you usually ignore most of the time. Like, for example, it's actually illegal to, here's two things you might not know, to sit on the sidewalk and panhandle anyone who is within 14 feet of a building. It's not just that you don't have to be, you yourself have to be 14 feet away from a building, but you also have to be panhandling a person 14 feet away from a building. That's part of the law, too. That's never enforced, but it could be. Then there's the part of the law that says you can't do it while seated on public property. Guess what the sidewalk is? That's public property. Again, that section of the law has never been enforced. But regardless of that, let's suppose you're a really law-abiding citizen. You make sure that you're 50 feet away from all the new change-making machines that have been put in around the metro and all the ATMs and even the bubblegum machine, which is a change dispensing and receiving machine, which also qualifies. It's on Cathcart Street, right off of Pacific. Let's suppose you stay away from all those machines and you're 14 feet away from the buildings. And then you're also being very careful. You really don't want any problems. So you additionally follow the following restrictions, which reduces the area you're allowed legally to sit in considerably. You don't sit on a bus stop. You're not in any public transportation vehicle or facility. You don't sit in your car and do it. You don't sit on private property and do it without the explicit permission of the owner or tenant. You are 14 feet away from any crosswalk. You're not seated on any public bench, planter, monument, or other public property. And there's more. Let's suppose you do all these things. And that's what Shane Maxfield was doing by his account. Not disputed by the police, by Manafree Srinath, the owner of Lulu Carpenters, who angrily approached him and abused him in front of Lulu Carpenters or near Lulu Carpenters, but 14 feet away because you can't be within 14 feet of a building or 14 feet of a sidewalk cafe. So he was 14 feet away, determined that. Police officers who came to his call saying, "Help me, this owner is abusing me. What can I do? He's threatening me. He's telling me, get out of here. I have to leave. Get the fuck out of here. We're going to do something about you," that sort of thing. I don't know if he used the word fuck. And Shane called up. Police officer came and told him there was nothing he could do unless his life was being threatened, and then said, "I smell a ticket coming if you don't move along." And he said, "What do you mean? I'm here legally." And he said, "Well," and then he gave him a citation for panhandling with obscene language, which is the law that we took to court when a guy with a "fuck the pigs" sign was in his hat after being repeatedly abused by the police. A guy got two tickets for having this "fuck the pigs" sign in his hat because he was sick of being harassed by police. He didn't say anything. He just had this little sign. The police tried to punish him for that opinion, and the federal court settlement found that that was $25,000 wrong and that the law had to be changed. So they changed the law now, but the law is now being misused again, and actually there's no crime here at all. He wasn't panhandling when he said, "You fucker," to an individual who was abusing him. In essence, get away from me, you fucker. So an individual who's poor and homeless is not allowed to defend himself or react or respond to abuse from a merchant. And when an officer comes on the call of the homeless person, he will ticket the homeless person. Now, I guess savvy people will say, "Well, come on, Robert, what the hell do you expect? It's the police. It's a class society. This is a reality, folks." Yes. But there are a lot of us who think that's really, really wrong. And there are other people whose opinions, when expressed directly, will have an embarrassing impact on the people in the city in positions of power who are supposed to not allow this to happen, even though it's endlessly winked at. So there'll be a protest a week from Friday on this issue in front of Lulu Carpenters. I invite you all to come. You can also find out more information on this by going to, I believe it's posted on indiebay.org, and it's also posted on another website. I think it's called Humanity. Let me find out exactly what that website is. I'm going to check it out here. Let's see what we got. Still looking, and we'll see if it's around. While I'm probing the situation, here's a little more from the street.
Where a man is trying to light what appears
to be a cigarette butt. Your name, sir?
Huh? Well, thank you. And my name is William Charles Simpson.
And William, what's...
Dobsey. Yeah.
What's the latest from the street?
Well, I'm living off the street. I'm keeping up with all my street friends. Okay. How many of them are doing good enough?
And what's the deal on that?
Just good enough. However, it's going to be a colder, harsher winter this year, even though the national weather people are saying it'll be milder. We had January cold showing up in late August. It's been showing up in September, October, this early in the year. Okay, now it may be milder for the summer, but you have a 25-year cycle for your Monterey Bay here, and you're now in the part of the cooling cycle for 25 years.
Now, what about the political weather? There's an election coming up in 2 weeks. Are you going to be voting in the city council elections?
Whatever silly council from Silly Cruz. No.
Mike Rocket and Cynthia Matthews are running, your favorite candidates.
I don't know if they are. I'm not keeping up. I have other things I'm involved with. I don't exactly support the County Green Party because they seem to be a bunch around here who use the environment as an excuse to push real estate prices up so they can continue to make homeless, right? Everyone doesn't like affordable housing. You have a bunch of yuppies around here only want to brag about what their house could resell for. Sooner or later, get the house prices down. Why don't they just tell Santa Cruz High School graduates to move the hell and ass out of this county? Because the mommies and daddies are not going to build an affordable house their graduates can live in. I've seen them. They couldn't live at home any longer. Santa Cruz High School graduates couldn't afford a house, living in their car. Five of them. What kind of county in this country is so pathetic that parents won't even let their own kids grown in this county, born in this county, have a place to live? Stubborn, stupid Cruz.
Well, we have to have a better sort. You know, sometimes the young must be encouraged to move on to, Mexico, Thailand, you know, the better places.
Well, why don't their parents move to Mexico and Thailand?
Well, the elderly tend to have the power. The power, my man, the power.
Well, if it's so much better living there, why do they all want to live here?
Well, it's just cheaper living there. And we don't want their kind around here.
Huh? Well, that's what you have in this county. The county of rich snob insiders.
We've been talking with
William Charles Simpson.
Thank you. Why don't we switch now to the slow speed, all you listeners, or all you tape recorder operators.
Coming up shortly, don't go away.
So it's about 4:55. I'm out here with... Identify yourself, woman.
BB.
And you're a person who's been with SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, for a long time. You also have a fine white cat who's sleeping in her cage.
Oh, come on now.
No.
Everyone knows you.
No.
Yes.
I'm not going to talk to her.
You don't have to talk. You're the one who called me over.
I don't care. Do not put me on that. Do not.
Anyway, let's talk about your issue, shall we?
Yes. Okay. Cafe Cappuccino Mexican.
It's the Cafe Campesino.
Campesino.
Which is the green kiosk very close to where we're sitting out here.
The Mexican farmhouse food.
Yes.
The one people of the... there are not very nice to customers of the New Leaf. There's been about 6 complaints against them. I was sitting here last Wednesday, minding my own business on the corner, taking care of my own business, when a short hospitality man from the information center came out and asked me to leave. And I go, what for? He says, well, we've had several complaints of several clients in the area here that about you. I said, oh, yeah, the only complaint is right here at Cafe Cappuccino, nobody else. So,
Cappuccino,
yeah. I walked in to where I was treated, New Leaf, and they were asking me what was wrong. So I proceeded to tell them just what was going on. And they says, oh, we've had several customers in here complaining, and we're not happy with them. They seem to be snobs. They seem to think they own it all.
This is complaining about Cafe Campesino, not about you.
Well, I was told that there were several customers, but there was the only ones is them. They do not like certain people. If you do not trade with them, well, you're on their you-know-what list.
Well, we should say for those listening that this area, which used to be open to the public generally and still is sort of, during...
It was open. Yeah. There was this man...
Wait a minute, let me finish.
And his family sitting...
Before you go on, let me just give us a little background because people don't...
Okay.
They should know that in 2002, they put up a fenced area and they moved what previously had been the seating around the two cafes, the Cafe Campesino and what was then... It was used to be called Alibaba's Cafe.
But this is a popular place. Whether you buy food here,
right,
from New Leaf,
yeah,
or anywhere, it's a public place.
So they've actually, this is a leased area that has become somewhat privatized based on a contract they have with the city council. Actually, it was engineered by the redevelopment agency in order to drive away the young people who used to sit on this large planter that was here. They didn't like the people who gathered here, so they created a privatized area, which is, it's, as you point out, it is open to the public. But it is leased by these two cafes, the Cafe Campesino and Alfresco's. So what you're telling me is that the host told you that there have been complaints against you. Did he tell you where they were from?
No. When I asked, he said no. But there was this gentleman and his family sitting close by, and they were eating Chinese food.
It isn't served at either of these places, or
no,
at New Leaf.
No,
one should say this whole area serves Campesino, Alfresco's, and New Leaf. And in fact, on each table, the table we're sitting at, is a sign that says tables are for customers
but
of New Leaf Market, Cafe Campesino, and Alfresco.
The man stood up, and he says, well, ma'am, this is all I have, and you're welcome to have it, so you can sit here. And I said, well, that's very kind of you, sir. I'm really not hungry at this point. And he says, well, he says, are we welcome to stay here? Because we're not eating food from neither one of those places. And he says, yes.
The host said this.
The man that was sitting there with his family was talking to this hospitality, the little short one, and
so
the one that asked me to leave.
Right.
And
now you are, and I know you didn't like, we won't get into the kitty situation, which I think is a great cat, by the way.
But, Robert, I'm not talking
right anymore. But the fact of the matter is that you are a person who appears homeless, and so I think that might be the basis of this discrimination.
It doesn't matter, okay? It doesn't matter. It's not around that. Okay?
You don't think so?
None of their business or anybody else's,
okay? Well, the problem is it's visible.
Okay.
It's visible. I'm sorry. I got to talk about realities here. So.
Never mind. I'm sorry I asked you.
Okay, that's up to you, ma'am. So whatever you decide to do.
No. I will take it up with the courts.
Good luck.
upshot of all this is that that Bernadine has been away from Pacific Avenue.
BB
has been told to stay away from Pacific Avenue by this short host on last Wednesday. But you've been, you know.
I'm going on community TV about this.
Good. She plans to go on community TV.
A little.
And more important, you are still here, right? You haven't been intimidated from leaving.
Well, he's not telling me shit today.
So apparently he's backing off.
What's that?
Yeah. Up with Becky. She needs something for her show tomorrow.
Have they succeeded at all in deterring you and in discouraging you? I got you pissed, I see, but have you feel more uncomfortable being here than before, or how are you feeling?
I feel my rights. I know my rights. I want to see them try it again. That's all.
And so you have it. This was last Wednesday, and today, of course, is Tuesday, so that's 6 days later.
Tomorrow is Wednesday. We'll see.
Right.
And I told them no, that I had a right to be here because I was going to go over there and sing and play with that group over there. He says, well, why don't you go over there right now? I said, excuse me, I just got here and I need to rest. Mm-hmm. You know what rest is? Mm-hmm. Well, you can rest over there. I says, fuck you.
You're here. And did you have any comment? Did he say anything in response to that?
I don't care what he said. It doesn't matter. It's immaterial to me what he thinks or says.
And has anybody hassled you since then?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe he was told to lay off, or maybe you successfully defended yourself, and you're still here.
Comes around, I'll successfully defend myself.
Any other comments for Free Radio folks that you think they should know about?
No.
All right. Well, thank you for the update. Take care.
And it's a case of someone who's frequently down in that area and who's houseless and who doesn't like it that it's mentioned that she's houseless, but it is in fact the reason she's being harassed, because, you know, she's not acting badly. I mean, but she's visible and she's there for probably pretty significantly long periods of time, which would have been legal and okay if they had not set up a privatized area. I suppose in a certain sense it's still legal. Well, you know, if I actually have never seen a confrontation in that area on that sidewalk and a person refuses to leave and they get arrested and then the case is taken to court. I know that the idea was to drive away or discourage people who had been there before in 2002. Indeed, it was where I got arrested prior to their actually putting this up. I was putting up a table urging that the businesses be boycotted who were asking that the area be fenced off as it's now fenced off, the outdoor seating area, because it was clearly an attempt to move along people, like the removal of benches in front of Borders, the removal of the bench in front of the Pacific Cookie Company, all the other architectural anti-homeless moves have been. Anybody have any thoughts on this? Feel free to call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I'm still waiting here. I'm wondering if anybody's hearing this, so let me know if you have any thoughts about it. So, apparently, you know, the police are not too eager to move in on old-timers, people who have been around for a while. And she's been around for a while, this last speaker, and has some support. I mean, she's a regular at SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. I don't know that she has any kind of an arrest record or criminal record at all in terms of any kind of anything that I'm aware of. She's simply poor, and she's simply visible. And, you know, she offends the sight of some people, some businesses there through the duration of her being around. And that is too damn bad, really. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Yeah, I wanted to be on that radio show.
Sorry?
I wanted to be on that radio show.
Sure. I mean, you're on right now. You're on the air.
I'm talking to you?
Yeah.
Oh, good. But it's not coming on the radio, though. Okay.
Oh, it's not coming on the radio.
Oh, no. The radio, he just keeps talking.
Oh, you got to turn it down.
Right on.
There's a delay.
Okay, good.
I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say about the whole business scene downtown. Downtown is really, what's good for business is all that city council really cares about. They don't really care about people that are down and out or struggling. As a matter of fact, there are parks and the beach and other places where people can go to just to feel a little freer and unhassled if they truly want to be unhassled. But if people want to be downtown because they need money or they want to ask for something, whatever they're looking for, I can understand why they want to be down there. And I think they have a right to be down there, but I don't think they have to, they should be there more than an hour in one particular place. Just because it might become, look a little slovenly just to the vibration of the scene. I mean, it's good for people to move, keep the energy moving, and I think it's pretty cool. I mean, I've seen the guy that sits on that nice prayer rug and plays the harmonium and sits in Buddha posture, and it's really sweet and good vibes coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to me, for me, he can stay there forever, you know, for the end of time.
You're referring to the Swami near the coffee roasting company.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, he can stay there until the end of time. But I mean, the whole point, I think, is, in a nutshell, placement, and if there's any complaints, then just move to a place where it's a little less possible that there's going to be any kind of complaint. Now, the place behind that gelato place where there's a nice seating area with a bunch of benches and a water fountain there near the Museum of Art History, that's a really beautiful place to hang out. And I don't think anybody that's hung out there for 4 or 5 hours on a bench would be hassled.
Now, have you what's your name, caller?
Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Hey.
Welcome to the show, by the way.
Right on.
Have you spent much time in that, I guess it's the McPherson Center Plaza or whatever, it's right outside the Museum of Natural History.
That's right.
Yeah, right behind Gelato's, right, it's kind of, yeah.
It's a really good
Cooper
place
Street.
To be because not only is it peaceful and open, but I don't think anybody that has a business is going to look around and see if anybody's sitting on a bench and going to call anybody to complain. I think it's a question of being a little intelligent about where you put yourself, and also, if people do complain, just go to a place where you know you're not going to be bothered again right away, and that's probably the smart move to make, rather than just stand firm where there's a lot of hot water, unless you really have to be there because you're waiting for a friend. I mean, I can see if someone has a legitimate person they're waiting for, and they have to be at that particular place, that's a legitimate reason to be there. But after 4 or 5 hours, if they're still there, it just seems a little strange, but I mean, to me, freedom is an important thing, but freedom to move is also available, so the key is not to be stuck in space, you know, like an ice cube, but feel free, so therefore, if the action of the moment seems to be moving you forward, then move forward somewhere else. And I don't know if it's a bad thing that what they're trying to do, like in the parking garage, trying to keep people moving, because there are bike thieves, unfortunately, that do work and steal bikes and then they repart bikes.
Well, they aren't just trying to keep people moving. It's illegal to enter a parking garage now unless you have a car or bicycle.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, you know, I noticed that once. I was walking along the one near the vet's hall and there's a bank walkway right alongside the whole thing, so you can just walk along the bank walkway instead of going through the parking lot, which, you know, you don't get the gas fumes. But it's all relative. It's like what I'm trying to say in a nutshell is we can make intelligent moves. And even if we're being restricted, which is always available, the stop signs and everything else that's in our society, we can just try to be intelligent about where we decide
yeah,
to
Paul,
go.
But, Paul, isn't there a difference between a stop sign, which is really meant to regulate traffic,
right,
and a law that is designed to be selectively enforced against poor and homeless people that they don't want to see downtown?
Well, I don't think they should selectively enforce anything. I think they should enforce the law as it is. And if people are really angry about a law, they should go to city council en masse and challenge it. Intelligently and with some proof that they're being harassed, whatever.
Well, but we did that in 2002. You know, actually, they held hearings to determine why, you know, what the major complaint was of people downtown. They found there were two major complaints, and they actually headlined it in the Sentinel.
Right.
Two complaints were police harassment and selective enforcement. The response of the city council getting the report from the Porter Riley Committee was to make the laws even worse and give the police more power. So
well, always give the police more power. See, the police are the right-hand man of the business community. I mean, they do protect and serve the citizens, but they're really there to preserve the capitalistic business interest, because that's really what's motivating everyone to work, you know, to get money and everything. That's what everyone's driving.
Well, maybe what you're saying is that it's best not to, you know, to make a target of yourself to kind of keep in motion unless you have a bunch of people behind you, and then you can maybe get a change in the law. Is that what you're
well,
saying?
Well, you know, it's good to stand on your own, you know, stand on your own 2 feet. You shouldn't need other people to support a good cause, but I just think that depending on the person's individual situation, if they're waiting for a particular person and they have to be at a particular spot because that's where they told the person they would be, that's an intelligent reason to be there, and there's no one that should fault that person for being there. Now, if the person is, you know, causing a problem with people walking by in any sense, and it's obvious that they are, then that's a problem. But if they're not bothering anybody and they're just waiting
patiently. Yeah, we have laws that say even if you're not causing a problem,
right,
that 75% of the sidewalk is off limits to you for sitting,
right,
that 95% of the sidewalk is off limits to you for spare changing.
Right.
And so this is all, and what that means is that even if you take those sections of the sidewalk, you are allowed to be, if you stay there for more than an hour, you can be harassed under the Rotkin move-along law.
Definitely. The move-along law is, they want to keep all the energy going. They don't want anybody to be draining too much money from all those stores, you know, all the customers, potential customers.
Yeah, they're a real drain, those pandas.
They're a real drain. I mean, they take a lot of that change.
Big time.
It eats away at the profits of these companies, you know, these stores.
I wanted to point out that the parking garage paranoia signs have gone up.
Oh.
So that now, they used to, and the law was passed, it went into effect in July, but
right,
the actual signs didn't go up, as far as I know, until recently. And I saw,
they painted the place first.
I guess so, yeah. They did paint the place, and they're also, and now they got these new signs that say, if you know, these are for the purpose. I think I've got a recording of it of myself reading it later, but the signs are up. So all you protesters out there who are going to do some protesting, I believe at the Crow, if you're out there, do some protesting. Let us hear from you. Anyway, Paul, any other thoughts before I...
Well, I just want to say, you know, that the whole situation with the homeless situation is this. This is one of the most, unfortunately, expensive places to live in the country, crazily enough. And all the landlord real estate speculators know this. And so everything's at a premium, basically. And what I'm trying to say about all this is that homeless people don't have a lot of luck, because if you don't have a job, it's hardly even enough to get in the door of any kind of living situation to begin with. So if you don't have a job, you basically get two flat tires and you're rolling down the road kind of chugging along. And you're going to keep going, but kind of chugging along. But it might just go to the point where the car just dies. So my attitude is the city should have state parks available where people can put up a tent long-term and work there to clean shrubbery and other things in exchange for a place to put a tent.
And
now, every day they have to put in hours, and if they don't put in hours, they have to get the hay out of there. But if they keep to the agreement, they have a place to be. Now, that to me,
it's a great idea.
Is a smart state-city consciousness. You know, using
sure,
the state park,
sure,
aligning them with the city homeless program, and putting them to a place where they can be,
well,
not because they're out of sight of the public, but because they have a nice place in nature to be.
Yeah, Paul, they tried that one in 1996 with New Brighton Beach, at the same time as they were clearing out the city-owned open-air shelter at Coral Street.
Right.
And they sent 42 people off to New Brighton Beach because they were violating the agreement that the campers had made with Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which ran the Coral Street, that they weren't going to be evicted. Some 200 people were evicted, and 40 of them were given temporarily 2 weeks in the New Brighton Beach.
Yeah, 2 weeks. How about 2 months to begin with?
Right. Well, the point is that there's all kinds of anti-homeless laws that the state parks now have.
Oh, yeah.
About how long you can stay. I think it's you can stay 1 week per month. And
yeah, that sounds
then,
right.
And then you have to move along. And no more than a total of 1 month stay per year, I believe. I'm not quite clear on what the current rule is.
Yeah, but in other words, what they're trying to say is don't assume it's the Hotel California, yeah.
But I'm saying, no, the Santa Cruz City has a responsibility not to throw it into the state parks.
Ah.
We've got plenty of green land ourselves. We could put up, you know, some nice areas in the Poganip. I know environmentalists would scream bloody murder, perhaps.
Right.
But, you know, there's, you know...
It could be a beautiful camp, though, if they find a nice flat land with some... where they could set up almost like an Indian village.
Yeah,
it would be an amazing experience.
There's
for
the old park clubhouse that's up on, you know.
I know, I've been up there.
Area.
You know, it's a good idea, because the only thing is there's two problems. One, they're worried about people that are going to use drugs and alcohol and maybe cause either violence or destruction to property. And see, unfortunately, a lot of homeless people, the only fun they have is drinking a bottle of something at night if they can find one or share one between their friends and sisters. And so what I'm trying to say is, unfortunately, when you're homeless, your options for enjoyment are limited.
Paul, have you been homeless much? Sure.
I've been homeless, yeah, and I haven't been living on the street, though. I lived in someone's backyard in a tent. I lived in my brother's backyard in a tent.
I mean, I think there's a lot of stereotypes about homeless people. I don't know if it's fair to say that, you know, that the homeless people are a rowdier crew than people who aren't homeless. I think, in fact, maybe even less rowdy, because they have to keep such a low profile. I know that it's you know...
Well, there's no stereotype I'm trying to present, except to say...
Well, I think there's one coming out, what you're saying.
Well, what I'm trying to say, though, there are in the population of homeless a percentage that indulge in alcohol.
Sure, and in the population of people in houses, there are,
of
too.
Of course, of course.
And the problem you have is not
It's not just the alcohol, though. It's the question of the mood of the person taking the alcohol. That's what I'm trying to say.
Now, the problem is that the bigotry of the city is the problem. I mean, for me...
Well, you know, whole thing is fear. See, the fear of the potential problems that may arise.
Sure. And they had fears of blacks and fears of women.
Well, there's always going to be fears when it's not equal.
Right. Well, and if you sit around waiting for those fears to disperse or trying to placate those fears, I don't think that works. What you need to do is mobilize people to get together and say, we frankly don't give a shit how afraid you are.
Right.
You know, I mean, we don't want you to be afraid, but if that's how you are, that's a pity. But our rights have to be respected here.
Well, as citizens,
we're human beings.
As citizens,
as residents.
Well,
I don't give a damn if you're
a citizen. You deserve a residence. Exactly. If you're a citizen.
Members of the community, one way or another, whatever legal papers you have.
That's right. And so, therefore, if you're a citizen resident, there should be a program in the city where people can sign up. If they don't have a home,
right? So how do we get it? See,
isn't there supposed to be a city homeless program run by Paul, whatever his name is?
No, there's a program tonight that gives space to about somewhere between 28 and 40 people for beds out of 1,500 to 2,000 people out there that will be closing soon because they can't afford the transportation costs, and they're going to put in I think 40 to 60. Beds or places to sleep at a cost of $600,000 in the homeless service center. But that doesn't help people this winter.
What do we do this winter is my question. Well, this winter the whole point is you have to have the space available. Now, London Nelson, the guy that left that land for the space down there at the center, I'm sure he would want one of those rooms to be used at night to house homeless people. So the key is, whoever's in charge of the London Nelson Center should be requested to have a meeting with the homeless council and request a place available for homeless people to have a place to sleep in when they wake up in the morning.
You know, it sounds like you've got a lot of great ideas, and I know I've heard a lot of great ideas come out of official city commissions that say such things as open up a car park, open up a level of the parking structure that isn't used at night.
How about buildings that have heated them, then bathrooms? Why not use something that's more respectable?
Sure, the point I'm making is that they don't want to do any of this stuff.
Of course not.
They won't do it unless...
You know why? It's too much of an insurance problem. What if someone dies there?
You know, we can jabber about it from here to hell.
Right, to make it happen, how do we do it? Right?
That's my question. Yeah,
so how do we do it? Well, the point of the matter is power comes from money, and unfortunately all the people that have the decision-making power are driven in that direction. So the homeless people, unfortunately, don't have anybody to represent their interests because very few. There's some nice lawyers out there that do, but very few, and because, you know, they're in business.
Well, I know that in some cities homeless people have gotten together and established encampments, and in fact they've done it in Liberty City. I believe it's Fort Lauderdale or Miami. It's happened recently. It happened, of course, in Portland, Oregon with Dignity Village. So, Paul, thanks for the call. I'm going to let some
keep moving,
but
I'll tell you one thing, man. It's a good show, but there's one thing you have to always realize.
Uh-huh.
Money is power. And without power, the homeless don't have power unless the people with money care. So once people start caring about everybody and sharing a little bit, and also opening up places that are dedicated to help, like community places.
I gotcha. The reality of the situation is, though, because we're dealing with the fact that we aren't very rich, even those of us who are sympathetic, you know, the reality is if we're going to get together, we have to do things that don't necessarily involve money, but they involve people power. So let's think about
that. Well, let's go for people power.
Thanks.
Right.
Bye-bye, Paul. Phone lines are open. Tell me what your thoughts are. 427-3772 is the phone number here. What kind of power? Well, for example, there's going to be a protest a week from tomorrow outside Lulu Carpenter's in the afternoon. Why? Well, I've talked about it before. Discrimination, collusion between the police. Should the merchants have, won't be one law or one policy from the police department for merchants and another policy for the poor? I made this point at City Council. I'm going to play that and then play the response of some of the City Council members. Hang in there. We're almost there. Councilmembers Robert Norris, members of the community. There are currently lawsuits in San Diego and Los Angeles which will eventually, and actually are currently, allowing homeless people to sleep at night legally. thousands of them, in a situation that is similar to Santa Cruz, in that Santa Cruz is a similar ordinance, has a similar police enforcement policy of not allowing homeless people to sleep at night, and of course having utterly inadequate shelter. This is my lead-off because it's still true tonight, and it still makes a lot of people suffer. And there are currently lawsuits in Fresno. Recently, a federal court's granted a lawsuit enjoining the police from seizing homeless property as they went through the kind of nighttime harassment that they do in cities across the country, including here. I'm concerned about how homeless people are treated downtown. In the audience with us tonight is Lulu Carpenter's owner, Manafree Srinath, who I have been told, I think authoritatively, abusively treated a disabled homeless man with AIDS outside his cafe. That's perhaps between the two of them. My concern is more that the police, when called by the homeless man to protect himself, instead got a ticket for obscene panhandling, the same code section that you were sued for, you granted a settlement to another man for, and is now back again before you. And so is this disabled man is going before the courts again in this situation. I'm concerned that there's differential enforcement with police and merchants, that a homeless person who calls the police to be protected from apparent threats from a man who has already once before been charged with battery against a homeless person and cited for that in 2003 in March, the same owner. In spite of this record.
Point of order. I think, Mr., you ought to direct your comments to me. And to.
And this is Tim Fitzmaurice making a point of order, interrupting my speech. The community.
Well,
the
I just want to say, I don't think I'm going to win this point of order, but I think it's rude to use this forum not to address public business, but to address your particular
this
gripes
is public
for particular
business.
People.
The public.
No, I do not believe it is.
Yes, it is. This council has the power to make changes in the police department and to investigate whether there is, in fact, the kind of collusion and favoritism and discriminatory treatment that I think a lot of the community knows exists and that is reflected in legislation which this council passes and which the community has to suffer under. We see most recently signs that have been posted that I saw this evening that if members of the community spend more than 15 minutes in a parking garage, traditionally people have been feeling perfectly comfortable sitting in their cars thanks to Mr. Coonerty's legislation here. Homeless people, and that's what it's directed against, homeless people there at night under the eaves of buildings being pushed out. So laws are not only created that are targeting poor people, and this council isn't alone in doing this. It's done in councils throughout the country. But we need to be better on this issue. And that's why I bring up this particular individual's name. I talked to him before this meeting. We had no hostile words towards each other. It's not a personal issue. It's an issue of public policy. And I talked to the sergeant about what could be done in terms of the situation. I think homeless people need the same kind of protection downtown that the merchants are claiming. And if police are being partial and creating, in essence, as I believe was done by the officer, a new category of offense, because he said, after being harassed, "You fucker," to the man who had harassed him. We need to change that and make sure that our policies are evenly followed. And I don't believe that's a personal attack on anybody. Thank you.
Ryan.
I just want to make a brief comment because some people at home may not.
This is Ryan Coonerty, council member. He's going to be making a statement that will sound almost verbatim like the kind of statements Mike Rotkin makes, but who knows?
Some in the audience.
Or some in the audience may not know the facts of the situation, which is there in the state of California, counties provide social services. The city of Santa Cruz, because it has a commitment to social justice, provides more services for homeless people and people in need than any other city in the country our size. And I challenge anyone to find a city that has more, offers more shelter, more.
Santa Monica.
Offers more in order to help the people in our community. And we're not perfect and we have a long way to go. But this idea that somehow we are alone in targeting homeless and not supporting people in need is just completely false.
And, of course, I never said we were alone. But I pointed out that I didn't point out here, but we have a sleeping van that criminalizes homeless people at night. Overwhelming majority of them. 30 tickets a month are issued, at least. And many more are driven on. And many more face violent situations because they can't sleep together safely. And this issue is continually ignored in spite of city commissions. The Homeless Issues Task Force's report on this, the city council's finding in 1999 that there was no magnet effect if a sleeping ban law was lifted. This continues to be lied about and misrepresented by candidates running for office like Mike Rotkin. And as you can see, the issue continues to be unaddressed. Also, Coonerty's comment that we have the best and the most social services is as false as it was in 1997 when Mike Rotkin made it and Celia Scott successfully challenged it. She was on the council then. So we have the same lies and misinformation and hustle to cover up going on here, and more of it as we listen to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of Tuesday evening. That's two nights ago.
Okay, anyone else? Jeff?
Little did I think I'd be speaking in oral communications tonight. But I want to make a point.
This is Jeff Dunn, who was involved with community TV and sort of an up-and-coming political type. He shook my hand when he entered the city council chambers. I'm not sure why. He's not running for office, but he speaks here.
Member of the community, someone who attends council meetings, and someone who watches council meetings at home, how offensive so many people find this part of the council meeting for the kind of behavior we just saw exhibited here. And what was a personal attack on someone who's a very strong and positive contributing member of this community and a business that is as well, I feel compelled to come up here and say that I have been a customer of Lulu Carpenters for many years. They've been a very strong and supportive member of the community and of the business community. And to single out the owner for an interpersonal relationship, I think, is an inappropriate use of oral communications. Councilmember Fitzmaurice, I appreciate that. Thank you.
And, of course, he dismisses what I said as interpersonal relations, when, in fact, it has to do with an issue of public policy, namely the police and their relationship to complaints given by homeless people vis-a-vis the merchants. Now, it's also true, I mean, full disclosure, the demonstration that's going to be happening on Friday will concern itself with encouraging people to boycott Lulu Carpenters and to raise issues around what other incidents have people observed downtown that cause them concern on this issue, and to demand the city council take some action stopping differential selective enforcement of laws or even creation of new interpretations of laws that involve driving homeless people away at the behest of a merchant. Just because a merchant has a bee in his or her bonnet, you know, there's just no accountability here. It seems to me, and a number of people have felt it. If you go online to indiebay.org again, and I'm also looking for this other website. I guess it's a main story, and it's, let's see here, Santa Cruz coffee shop owner at it again. A story not written by me, but by Tim Rumford. And that's at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And just check in the middle column. There's a picture of the man who claims to have been assaulted, or in essence abused at least, by Manafree Srinath, and then ticketed. And there's a picture of the ticket itself. And there's some lengthy discussion on the website about it. Apparently some as recently as tonight. Thursday night. So I can read some more about that as well, but let's listen to a little more commentary from the city council session. Let's let things speak for themselves.
Your comment.
Mayor Matthews, council members, Ed Davidson. I hadn't planned on speaking, but I wanted to say something about the homeless issue that seems to be getting occasionally out of hand. My view is that you can see the homeless solutions as a glass being half empty or the glass being half full. Yes, we are very pleased with the progress that you've made in providing services, but the problems are not solved. We have more and more homeless here because they can't afford local rents. And these are the people who are not the troublemakers. These are the people who are sleeping in their cars or whatever. But they're there. So the glass is still half empty. Just for a perspective on that. And I have for 20 years now, been complaining about the fact that we're only building condos in our multifamily zones, ownership units. You saw last session that the statistic was, except for subsidized rental projects, we have built none in 20 years. None. And we're working toward an hourglass-shaped demographics. We are killing the middle class in Santa Cruz. Middle-income people have nowhere to live in Santa Cruz. And for the people on the lower end who can't afford rents, they're back. They're the homeless. And you guys are promising to mitigate the impacts of the university. They're doing more for rental housing than you guys are. And you are not mitigating the off-site rental housing crisis in Santa Cruz. You're not doing it. Now, the ordinances last time, I don't think they're going to really make a difference. But the point is, even the downtown, the housing opportunity sites, condos. We're getting them out in my neighborhood, out on Grant Street. We're getting knockdowns and 3- and 4-unit condo townhouse types. That's what we're doing with our RL zones, and commercial zones are 100% condos.
I will just state it's an inaccurate statement that there have been no rental housing projects built in Santa Cruz in the last 20 years.
Or that the city of Santa Cruz hasn't built many more units than the University of California in terms of rental units over the past whatever period you'd like to pick.
Even so.
You approved that 3 months ago. Sorry, go ahead.
Mayor Matthews, Vice Mayor.
And we do have a caller. Hey there, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Robert. Hi,
hey, Bernard
speaking. And I'm just hearing that, you know, I heard you talk. In fact, I thought you were just giving a beautiful speech and telling them how public policy, you know, relates to police and how they treat homeless people. I did not see where you were attacking anybody in there. In fact, I think you were bending over being sweet to them. You know, for Fitzmaurice to call you out of order, you know, he says this is not legitimate business. I just don't understand it. You're talking about police business, and police business is public. To the city, I mean, the city council is the boss of the police. So I don't understand that. And also, I don't understand this. Ryan Coonery, you know, either these guys are just phony, or they just don't know what you know, we're talking about mainly the criminalization, you know, of the homeless. We're not really talking about social services per se. We are for social services, but we, you know, dwell mostly on the criminalization factor. I just don't understand this, Robert. It is, you know, actually hearing that, you know, it makes me feel crazy, because they are not addressing what we're addressing. We're not telling them that the homeless people should be allowed to piss and shit all over their streets and whatever like that. We're not saying anything like that. We're just saying, you know, homeless people shouldn't be criminalized for being poor and for not having a place to sleep. That's what we're talking about. We're not giving permission to homeless people to just, you know, do things that people that live in houses can't do. Where am I wrong on this? You know, I wish somebody would call me up and say, you know, where's my logic here?
Well, I'll be Mike Rutkin here or Ryan Coonerty.
Oh, do you?
Sure, we fairly enforce these laws. The homeless in our city have, you know, as good a time as anywhere else. This is a very expensive city to live in, and, you know, the economic facts are real. If you don't have the do-re-mi, you have to go somewhere where you do, where you can find shelter, where you can, you know, get work. Santa Cruz has an economy. We've seen downtown the merchants, many of them banding together to assure a sub-minimum wage, or a lower minimum wage, I should say, than many workers are trying to get with Proposition G. And I'd like to give, I think we should give a list of the merchants. Some people have been encouraging a boycott against those merchants, you know. But, you know, in answer to your question, they feel that there are certain legitimate functions for a shopping district, and these don't include having homeless people there for very long if there's any objection from any merchant whatsoever.
Yeah, well, that's,
I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah, but that's called loitering laws, and those were found unconstitutional.
Right, so instead of loitering laws, we have all the downtown ordinances, which your organization, the Human Rights Organization, which meets every Saturday, I believe, 145 at the Homeless Service Center at 115 Coral Street?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you've been fighting that for at least 3-4 years now, and you can't even get the city council to... The only way the city council reconsiders these laws is if they're taken to court. They're found to be unconstitutional. They have to put money out, and the judge tells them, change the damn law. That's what happens, right?
Listen, Robert, you aren't even addressing my point.
I'm sorry, what's your point?
My point is, when you hear the responses, you know, of people like Coonerty, especially, you know, he gets on his soapbox, which is okay, you know, and he says that the city of Santa Cruz, you know, spends more money, and he argues they don't even have to because it's a county responsibility. Well, he probably has, to a certain degree, a certain point there, but it's really not addressing the issues that we're bringing
up. Well, remember that Ed Davidson brought up another issue about the fact that homeless services are inadequate and that housing is inadequate. So that's what did Coonerty speak before Ed Davidson or after? I don't.
Before.
Well, then, actually, you're right. His response was to ignore the issue, which is what they always do. And the reason they ignore it is because they can't address it.
Even Mr. Davidson, unfortunately, ignores it.
It is a clear human rights violation to arrest people for sleeping when there's no shelter. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has found that in Los Angeles. You know, the Miami courts have found that. Any ordinary, commonsensical person on the street will tell you that. The fact of the matter is, these are politicians who cater to a particular class of people who have expensive houses and who have businesses downtown. Some of them have expensive houses, but, you know, they have businesses downtown, and they particularly don't give a shit. In fact, they don't just give a shit. They want.
Well, I'm starting to think that because they won't. They will not argue, other than Rotkin. You know, he will. You know, use the. He'll bring the Magnitsky in. Now, he's the only one that will...
Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about Rotkin bringing in the criminalization. He's the only one really will argue with us. But, you know, we might want to deal with... You know, Coonerty, by the way, you do strike a raw nerve in him. Just the fact that he had to say something, you know, to what you said.
Well,
let me finish. Yeah. He, of course, he's not on point, but he did give us an opening. We could jam it down his throat if we wanted to.
Oh, I take it you're going to be showing up at the demonstration at Lulu Carpenter's Friday.
Yeah, right, but that's not what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay? Let me talk about what I think
that
he's opened up a hole for. He said he welcomes anybody, you know, that wants to show that other cities offer more social services. So why don't we cram that down its throat? Can we get some documentation about other cities that give homeless people more social services?
Well, you can contact Celia Scott, or you can talk to Linda LeMasters, head of the Homeless Issues Task Force. You can get that kind of information if you want, Bernard. I think it's pointless to try.
Pointless to do that.
Well, I think it's good. It's good to show it to the community that he's wrong. I mean, I say a letter to some publication which gets published, in a wide audience. But you see, then the question is, what do you do next? This is like we're trying. All this stuff has been covered in '99 and in 2000 by commissions and protests. It's all been repeatedly gone over. The problem is there's no will to change any of this stuff because the power is all on the other side. And also there's so much mounting apathy. I mean, I look at the website around the Lulu Carpenter's issue, around the issue of, police and merchants, and I see a lot of sarcastic false postings, it looks like to me. It's interesting.
I just don't see how these people thought that you were doing a personal attack on anybody.
The idea was I was naming names and calling people out. And rather than suggest, if they didn't say acknowledge it was a personal attack, then maybe it had something to do with policy. That was a perspective they could not abide. And therefore, I had to be classified as someone making a personal attack. It's a lie. It wasn't a personal attack. It was holding a person accountable for what he did. And in essence, trying to tell other merchants, don't do this, or we'll bring it up to city council and embarrass you as well. Because that's the only thing we can do. The cops won't do it, but maybe other people will say, well, we're not going to buy at people's stores and act like that toward homeless people. That's to some extent the power, the minor power that you have at city council. Because people are listening and they say, what? What are you doing, Mr. Srinath? Why did you do that? And he has to come up with a story. All right.
Okay, I just wanted to tell you what I thought, and if anybody else wants to call in and, continue on, I would appreciate it.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bernard. And indeed, I invited Manfred Srinath to be on the air, both through a phone call, and I talked to him, as I said in the speech to city council, before the council meeting. And he said to me, are you my enemy? And I said, no, I'm not your enemy. I'm concerned about what happened. I don't like it. I'm going to talk to city council about it. But I want to, if you want to mediate, that would be great. I'd be happy to do that. If you want to, discuss it on the air, give your side, give him my card, you can do that too. He has not responded other than, he said, oh, thank you, I'll consider that. But there hasn't been a response. So perhaps I'll give us a response on a week from Friday when we show up outside his place and give out literature and encourage people to sign a petition. Not so much. I mean, it has to do with his place too, because I think one way to make the merchants aware that their behavior is not going to go unchecked is to hit them in the pocketbook, and you hit them in the pocketbook by encouraging people to say, unless you change your policy, we're not going to shop there. If your policy is to abuse homeless people and to file false charges against them and think you can get away with that, we're not going to patronize you. And I'm concerned about the shops like places I patronize, like Hoffman's, like Chianti's, like the Walnut Avenue Cafe, that put big, no on Measure G signs in their window. Measure G is the measure that establishes a slightly higher minimum wage than will be the case when the state raises the minimum wage, I guess, next year. They'll go up to $9.25 an hour from 7 something now with this measure G. I've seen one yes on G sign downtown on one business. My hat's off to Marilyn of Alfresco's for doing it and probably taking endless shit for doing so. But I see, these no on G people, that's Ryan Coonerty, Bookshop Santa Cruz, Neil Coonerty, supervisor, Bookshop Santa Cruz. They're both the owners, or at least I think the elder Coonerty is the owner. I don't know what stock the younger Coonerty has in it, but he works there. When you create when you make it harder for working people to survive in this town, you make it more likely they're going to become homeless. Hence, the relevance to this particular topic we're talking about. And merchants should be held accountable for this stuff. I understand Steve Argue called for a boycott of a number of merchants with no on G signs in their window. Now, I understand some merchants can't help it because somebody like Barry Swenson or George Au owns the property and tells them to put the sign on the window, like FedEx Kinko's, I'm told, has a no on G sign. And they ask the business there, and they say, we didn't put it up there. That's, you know, that's the landlord that puts it up. So, I mean, to some extent, I mean, you should, when you see a no on G sign downtown, go in and ask them, is this your position? Is this a position of your, you know, of your employees, of your business? I mean, talk to them about it. And then if you decide it is their determination that they want to keep people working for wages that they can't survive on in Santa Cruz, forcing them to take 2 and 3 jobs, then you can make the decision as to whether, you know, they should be patronized. Now, my suggestion, since there's only 2 weeks left, I mean, a boycott might have a certain effect for 2 weeks, but probably not a big one. But I would suggest a boycott extending beyond this election with this proviso, that if a store really feels, here I'm looking at the article, I should say the ad they have, that it's an unfair burden on locally owned family businesses, a distinct advantage to corporate chains, and will cost nonprofits a lot of money and dramatically increases costs to local-owned business-owned family businesses, will eliminate health care coverage or increase employee co-pays, all of which may certainly be true in some cases. If this seriously threatens their business, let them post their business situation on the window to let people know what's going on so we can see what's going on, so we don't have to trust them about this. Because it's my... And I don't know if this is true in every case, but it's my understanding when minimum wages are generally raising minimum wages proposed, at least this is what Nora Hochman, who's obviously a partisan with the SEIU, says, or the minimum wage campaign, businesses always scream, we're going to go out of business. Now, I don't know. I haven't researched this. I don't know if they always scream it. I don't know how true it is. I know I haven't heard anybody from the No on G campaign coming up and saying, look how many businesses went out of business in San Francisco and Santa Fe when they raised the minimum wage. I haven't heard of one business that's gone out of business. You can say these are larger cities, at least San Francisco is. But, I mean, and this is an issue that's covered elsewhere. The real issue, though, is what can citizens do to stand up against the kind of the corporate and local business power. By corporate, I don't mean like large national, international corporations. I'm talking about kind of a, corporate is the wrong word. It's a collusion of powerful businesses who control the downtown association and who have put in place this matrix of anti-homeless laws, which make it illegal to sit down on most of the sidewalk, make it illegal to ask peacefully for a spare change, even with a sign, silently, after dark, that allow the police to intervene in situations where merchants are threatening homeless people and then force the homeless people to abandon their rights, abandon their the space they're in, and give the merchant essentially privatization power over the sidewalks. I thought that's something we didn't want in Santa Cruz. We wanted community space. That's what I thought we wanted here. At least many of us do. For years, there was a policy of street performers' guidelines that were voluntary and had to do with simply telling a performer, I'd like you to move on after an hour because I've been sitting here listening to that damn tune again and again, and it's really getting on my nerves. You don't have to, you know. I mean, it's not a law, but could you? And the person might say, sure, no problem. When you walk up with a law book and say, you must move along every hour because we got through the city council with Emily Riley, who owns a bakery, and Ed Porter, who's a man who's got such a... I don't want to... You know, I mean, I'm tempted to use... rude and rough metaphors, like has a lemon up his ass on issues like marijuana, who wants to maintain as a drug warrior the war against people using marijuana in Santa Cruz. He opposes even this very moderate Measure G. I mean, Measure K, the lowest enforcement of marijuana measure, which is going to be on the ballot. He opposes that, and we got people like Matthews and Rotkin running, who also... They won't take a stand on it because they don't want to alienate the student community, but they have made snide comments about it, at least Rotkin has, not about the criminalization of the, I don't know, how many of the 200 arrests of people for marijuana last year, which were documented by Karen Horner, who has been spoke on the radio on this issue, and I believe I'll be playing her some of her discussion. It's kind of hard to hear and kind of a bad tape, but I'll try to play it on Sunday. But it's, instead of being concerned about the district attorney's pursuit of people like Roger Minch for simply selling medical marijuana, instead of being concerned with Rotkin's zoning laws, the Rotkin-Matthews marijuana zoning laws that don't allow, it didn't allow medical marijuana clubs to open for 5 years, and now ghettoize them in the Harvey West area, which prompts particular conflicts with the Harvey West folks, which has, where there's no attempt by the city to get doctors to give out prescriptions for less than $150 a prescription for people who are poor in the city and county area, in the city area, we're talking about the city council, where there's this sort of mock, or it's not really mock, it's a figurehead approach, it's a show approach, where you are making like you're doing something when you're not. And that's what, for example, the Office of Compassionate Use was when Rotkin and the city council passed it. Had some very good ideas. It said, you know, there's an Office of Compassionate Use to look for marijuana for low-income people, but only after the federal government says everything's okay. And that's not how it's going to work. You wait for the national government to do something, you're going to watch laws being passed like the War Commissions Act or the Military Commissions Act, which suspends the writ of habeas corpus and which allows the president to designate as he or she wishes any of us, citizen or non-citizen, guilty or innocent, an enemy combatant, and to disappear us, to, in essence, detain us without charges indefinitely. If you're a citizen, you get to go once to a court, and the court looks over the, says, has this person been declared an enemy combatant by the president? Yes? Okay. Next case. Now he'll have the protections of a military commission trial when they decide to charge you and when they decide to try you. Anyway, lots of bad things happening nationally. Why do we have to replicate this police state mentality locally? And on Halloween, which is supposed to be a fun time. I mean, I'm not a big guy for drinking. I'm not a big guy for smoking. But using these as a pretext for increased police force and increased police measures is just bad. It has a bad impact in the community. Call in if you like, 427-3772. That's the number to call. And let's listen to a little more tape.
Campesino folks and see if they complained, and to the hosts and see why they're going after this woman. And then, as I said before, she was reluctant to talk about it, but the fact of the matter is she's a person who is, her living condition isn't important, but the fact that she has a bicycle with her which is loaded down with black bags of, you know, her possessions, I suggested that might be a reason for the discrimination that she's involved with. And it's about 10 to 7 on Tuesday evening. We're listening to the lone guitarist, C.J. Stock, at his usual place, strumming illegally inside the parking garage. How's it going, C.J.?
How's it going, brother? How you doing, man?
No signs posted? No hassles?
Nothing yet. Nothing yet. They didn't even look at me.
And actually, there was a sign posted, which you're going to learn about in a bit.
Just drive by. Imagine as soon as they get the signs up, I'm going to have my chance.
Okay, referring to the parking garage paranoia law, 15 minutes in a parking garage allowed, but then only if you have your car, or your bicycle with you, CJ.
No.
Well, then you and I are both technically criminals, even as we stand here.
That ain't the first time I've been accused of that. Probably won't be the last.
Give us a tune, CJ.
Oh, let's see, what do I want to do? I'm all alone on Saturday night. I got no place to go. Bottle of wine, pack of cigarettes, watching the Ray Late Show.
Saw you the man walking the other day, wearing my brand new shoes. And I'm down the seat and stands again. Two.
They're looking at the new sign that CJ was playing right next to. It's a double-barreled sign which says free public parking, 3-hour limit at the top. And at the bottom, it includes these words: this garage is for parking vehicles and bicycles only. No loitering. Please leave your vehicle within 15 minutes of parking. If you have a valid disabled placard, please leave within 30 minutes of parking. Then vehicles must be parked in marked stalls and bicycles parked in appropriate facilities. No skateboarding or use of skate devices. So the two items about parking vehicles and bicycles only and no loitering, I suppose, is their gentle way of saying no trespassing if you are not in possession of a vehicle or a bicycle, because at least that's the wording of the law. Well, it's about 7:45 outside the council meeting after oral communications, talking with
Ed Davidson.
And Ed, you spoke rather eloquently, and we probably already played your tape on free radio along with some of the other folks who spoke. It looks like there are only two zoning hearings tonight. You spoke about the council's failure to build affordable housing. You want to talk more about that? Clarify for people what you mean?
Okay, well, affordable housing has a number of definitions, and actually they're building some affordable housing, which by their definition is subsidized, taxpayer-subsidized housing.
Sort of like the Nueva Vista Dolphin Lee project?
Sure, and the Near Lagoon housing project. And
why isn't that affordable housing by your definition?
Well, it is affordable, but affordable really means the definition of affordable housing is the cost of rents versus the ratio to the income. And if any housing that is cost you more than 30% of your income is not affordable by definition.
And you're saying that throughout the tenancy, well, Rotkin has been around here since 1979. Has he ever presided over or voted for the building of any housing that's affordable under your definition?
Well, back in the early 80s, I suppose there was some affordable housing where the rents matched the incomes.
Mm-hmm.
But
let's say since the end of the 80s?
Well, the 85 housing element was kind of the benchmark that I use.
Okay.
And essentially, we've been building, except for the subsidized housing, we've been building none. No rental housing.
And is that because people are trying to preserve greenbelt space, or because it's going to other kinds of housing that's more profitable for developers, or because what's actually happening?
Well, we have in the open space and greenbelt kind of purchases, we've actually made land scarcer to build on, and when you have a scarcity versus demand, the price of land goes up, and with high land costs, you can't get the profitability from rental housing that you can from homes for sale. And developers have opted to maximize their profits.
Is this true everywhere in the country or only in Santa Cruz?
Well, we're in a peculiar situation here where it's a little more extreme here, because in other communities in the Central Valley or other parts of the state, there are plenty of rental housing projects going up.
Was this because we're, you know, such valuable property that they don't want to, you know, they want to sell it to the rich San Jose, Silicon Valley folks and, you know, not build for the people, the peons who downtown, you know, do the work?
Not only that, but the real issue is that state housing law requires a housing element that addresses the housing needs of people. And here we have no need for expensive condominiums. We got plenty of housing that's going on all over the county, in the unincorporated areas, and Scotts Valley, and Capitola, and whatever. We have plenty of homes for sale. We do not have rentals.
So is the county board of supervisors, as well as the city council, been ignoring this issue?
Absolutely. And now they complain in their opposition to the university's growth, where all of those new students on campus are nearly all renters, and we have this shortage. And we have students who are
filling up the what would normally be single-family rental homes for families with multiple bedrooms. They're filled up with students, with cramming as many students as they can into those family neighborhoods and creating problems with their neighbors because their students in residential family neighborhoods are incompatible. And so there are all kinds of problems. And that's because we have not been building rental housing.
How can people learn more about this issue if they want? Is there a website they can go to? Is there any particular treatment of this? Has anybody written a history about this in Santa Cruz? Do you give weekly seminars?
Well, I don't think there's any organized groups addressing Santa Cruz's housing crisis. And as I say, the council supports these expensive condominiums because they're paying high property taxes. And that's helpful to our tax base. So that there's an interest in having these kinds of expensive homes here. But they're not meeting the needs of anybody here in Santa Cruz. What I explained is if you understand statistics, you know what a bell curve is. And what you have is one standard deviation over is the people, the 90% of the people, or the 10% of the people who can afford to buy the median-priced home or condo. On the other end, the 10% are the low-income people who are living in subsidized housing of some sort, or are homeless, as it turns out. And then you have this huge bulk in the middle. This between plus and minus one.
His needs are not being met.
And they can't buy. They can't buy. And the people who are living in houses that they could not afford if they didn't already own it, when they go, who's going to buy those houses?
They'll be bulldozed for new condominiums, perhaps.
Well, that's what's happening in our RL zones. We're getting single-family houses on 5,000-foot lots knocked down to build a couple of townhouses.
How can people get more information about this?
Well, we have a planning department has a housing specialist, and she's doing her best to try to help things. But
I mean, is there any book in the library? I'm looking for a layman who doesn't want to try to wend their way through the planning department. Is there a volume there? Is there a section? Is there a place online people
can
go?
Well, if you can remember 7-Eleven, that's the call number for planning and zoning and
call them up and ask them.
But the 7-Eleven in the library shelves, there'll be books. They're professional publications.
Are they accessible to lay people?
And HUD, sure. I mean, HUD puts out lots of publications.
Are you going to be doing some writing about this issue for the general public?
Not.
We'll be waiting for it.
Okay,
Ed.
I'll give it a shot.
Thanks for talking with Ed Davidson. Who himself was a planner, is that right?
I am a planner.
And you were employed by the city at one point?
Never by Santa Cruz. I've worked for Monterey County, Santa Cruz County, Sonoma County, and the Coastal Commission, and the city of Scotts Valley.
Well, thank you then, Ed.
Okay, do it.
And we're nearing the end of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We've got about 8 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in with any comments, now's the time to do it, 427-3772. Otherwise, you can catch me off air on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. A reminder, there apparently seems to be a carpool leaving from Santa Cruz on October 28th, Saturday, at 7:30 in the morning, Water and Ocean from the county at the county building, to join the U.S. Out of Iraq Now rally and march in San Francisco at UN Plaza at noon on Saturday in San Francisco. So again, carpool leaving 7:30 a.m. October 28th, Santa Cruz County Building. Who knows, maybe some people will be doing some stuff down here. I'm looking at a story from the San Diego Union-Tribune. San Diego Council also wants to settle a lawsuit from a dais set up inside a chapel at Point Loma Nazarene University. The city council last night took on some of the most complicated issues surrounding homelessness in and around San Diego. The city council engaged in often heated discussions about how to treat and house the homeless before an audience that included everyone from weathered transients and their advocates to the White House czar on homelessness. "We've done a lot tonight," said Council President Scott Peters. "We adopted a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. We wrestled with the winter shelter, and we are working on this lodging issue." After 3.5 hours of debate, the council voted to adopt a regional plan to end chronic homelessness that includes the construction of permanent housing, and this is the important one, order negotiations that could settle a lawsuit filed against the city that seeks to stop police from issuing illegal lodging citations, that's sleeping van tickets, folks, to the homeless for sleeping in public, and open the city's winter homeless shelter early this year over objections that the site poses environmental health hazards. But for the dozens of homeless men and women who made their way to the Serene Seaside University, one of the several community venues for off-site city council meetings, the session ended without an opportunity to comment. Prolonged discussions prompted Peters to eliminate their speaking time after reading aloud their names and thanking them for showing up. Carrie Williams was among them. She wanted to urge the council to stop issuing illegal lodging citations, such as the one she received in May. She also wants the council to offer amnesty to those who are dogged by outstanding citations. "You shouldn't punish people for being homeless," said Williams, who said she has lived on the streets since 2001. "I got an illegal lodging ticket and never dealt with it, and I have a $5,000 warrant out for my arrest. It's probably risky for me to even be here." The council appeared eager to settle the lawsuit, filed in San Diego federal court 2 years ago, that seeks to stop police from ticketing and arresting the homeless for sleeping in public when shelters are full. The council members asked for new negotiations with plaintiffs and acknowledged City Attorney Michael Aguirre's opinion that issuing the citations day and night as is unconstitutional based on a ruling of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in a similar Los Angeles case. The court found that this practice was, quote, cruel and unusual punishment. Meanwhile, the council adopted a sweeping plan to end chronic homelessness in the region, and there's more about that. If you want this story, you should go to the October 24th edition of the San Diego Union Tribune. Now, I suppose what Mayor Matthews might tell us, or Mayor former Mayor Rutkin, is that, well, see, our law is different. It allows you to sleep during the day, and therefore it's constitutional, because homeless people don't need to sleep at night. I think that that might not pass muster at federal court. It's never reached federal court in that form. And if you're interested in supporting a lawsuit around that, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We were beginning to work on that lawsuit last summer, which kind of ran out of steam, I should say, summer before last. And it's always on the agenda, particularly when Los Angeles has been told that it has to allow people to sleep, even though they've appealed that decision. They actually have decided, the city attorney unilaterally decided, he told the police, stop issuing tickets at night on Skid Row. We need the police here in Santa Cruz to do the same thing. Or are we more backward than Los Angeles? Well, we're just more hypocritical. And we're wealthier, I guess, and that's what we can afford to be, and maybe that's what it is. Anyway, I'm going to end a little early tonight with a little music. If you're interested in any of the issues I've raised, feel free to come to a Huff meeting, it happens every Wednesday. Just go to the Huff website for more information, huffsantacruz.org. If you'd like to come to the protest a week from tomorrow at Lulu Carpenter's, you can check indiebay.org. You can also go to another website in case we get deleted there for some reason, which I wouldn't know why that would happen, but let me see if I can find the other. It's called Humanity. Damn, I had it a moment ago. Stay with me here. Look for the article on Lulu Carpenter's on the Indie Bay website, which I think will still be up there. And check for the other blog, which is where you can get more information on this, and other people seem to be more actively concerned about the issue. I can actually give it to you now, I believe, in a moment. The actual website is coming up, folks. It's almost here. humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com. humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com. www.thepoliceofsantacruz.com. It's got a lot of stories on the homeless. It's Tim Rumford's website. He's the man who first brought this story to my attention. I'll be back on Sunday with more. If you're interested, check me out then. If you've got stories yourself, issues you want to raise, concerns, please get in touch. We can talk about them, or at least we can hear what you have to say about them. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Cortaban las orejas y nos amputaban un brazo o un pie. Les arrancaban los pechos a nuestras mujeres, cuánto padecer.
Quién puede entender?
people tell me, baby, can't be satisfied. Trying to worry me, baby, but I never end up getting to myself. People worry, baby.
Getting off to a good start here with some killer Led Zeppelin on From the Cream to the Dregs. I'm Uncle Dennis here with you for the next few hours, spinning discs from around the 60s and the 70s rock and roll and blues and stuff like that. And we're going to keep doing it for just as long as we can. Do stay tuned. Around 9 o'clock, we're going to have the Earth First Update. And then, of course, at 10 o'clock, our mystery group, which we didn't have last week because we were broadcasting something else on the 101.1. But now, hopefully, 101.1 is still working. Might be skipping a little bit, but, what do you want from free radio? Hey, there's another radio station in town that skips once in a while, too, and they're supposed to be professional. Oh, well. Hey, we're working on our technical issues, hoping to have those all cleared up by next week sometime. And so do stay tuned here, because we're going to have more rock and roll for the next 3 hours. And, of course, DJ Soup in the mix coming in at 11 o'clock. The fun just never stops here on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Came to the city of my happy home.
It's the same room.